Hi, this is Ken Tangent. This is episode 19 of What's It Like? My guest is Eileen Rivera, who is a podcaster, producer. What else should we add to your list?
That's good. That's good. Dog lover.
Oh, yes.
And I love dark chocolates.
And videos of your dog.
Yes, videos of them as well.
No videos of the dark chocolate yet.
Yeah, that's tough to shoot. You know, you have to have a special lens and great light, and then you don't want to melt it on top of that. So, yeah.
So how did you get into podcasting?
Well, podcasting is really new for me. I've been in media all my life. I knew at a very early age that I wanted to work in some kind of broadcast medium. I thought I was going to be a journalist at one point, and then I thought I was going to be a music director for radio, and I went to college specializing in broadcast communications, and then my first job out of college was in radio, and I worked in the traffic and continuity department, which is really not sexy at all. It's very, do you know what that is?
No, I have no idea.
It's ads, promos, billing, stuff like that, and I tried to do as much promo work as possible. And I was there at a smooth jazz and a classical station. They were a combo at the time. I worked there for about 2.5 years, and then I finally got into music programming at an adult rock station. And all of this is in the Bay Area, by the way. And I then afterwards decided that radio was not going to be my thing because there was a lot of consolidation at the time. And I even hear that it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, unfortunately, for the medium, because it's just all generic programming and there's not much innovation. And, the way that they choose the music to air is kind of all dependent with the music labels. It's not a very creative and fun place that I thought it would originally be. Mm-hmm. So I left that, and I eventually got a job working in internet radio for a company called ZDTV. And I was producing a news program that was, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours a day. And they folded that at ZDTV, which became Tech TV. And then I ended up doing some video field producing on the news end for them. And then I went back to doing video production. And then from there, I kind of stayed doing that for a long time, bounced around. And when you do video work, when you do any kind of production work, a lot of times, you know, you don't really stay with a job for like 10 years, 20 years or anything like that. I eventually started freelancing, started doing some work for Home and Garden television, the Travel Channel, History Channel, things like that. And then decided that wasn't for me either. And I think you never really, when you work in broadcasting, I don't know. I think it's fun to kind of dabble in lots of different genres, mm-hmm. different things. That's the beauty of it, right?
Right.
And eventually ended up back in technology. And I started working for a company called Revision 3, which is still out there producing lots of really good video content. And
video for the web, right?
Video for the web, mm-hmm. Yeah. So now everything's kind of moving towards the web, and I kind of feel like I've been lucky enough to start, you know, kind of relatively early in it. And then from Revision 3, I just started over at TWiT, This Week in Tech Network, with Leo Laporte, mm-hmm. and I'm his producer over there, and I also have my own show. And all of that is, you know, he likes to call it netcasting, not podcasting, but
maybe broadcasting.
Exactly. And everything is on the internet, and that's where we are now. In terms of me podcasting, I started my own personal show. I mean, I've always been behind the scenes. I've always been producing. Mm-hmm. I've always been directing, and then doing my own thing in front of the mic. I just started probably about two and a half years ago. And I started my own personal podcast called Bike Club Show, which is all about vampires and werewolves. And and what we do is we just talk about a lot of the TV shows, movies, and in that genre. And then in the meantime, you know, with my work at Revision 3 and with Twit, I kind of ended up you know, delving into more of the mobile space, the app space. And that's why I am now doing a show called All About Android, which is a podcast about Android hardware, devices, and apps, and help and how to. And then I also do an iOS show called App Slappy, and that's all app related again. And I guess, you know, you know, as long as you have the interest and the drive, and you want to do it, you'll probably do pretty well. You know? I mean,
is it true that nobody wants to be behind the scenes?
No, I wouldn't say that. There's a ton of people that want to be behind the scenes. And it gets a little, you know, being in front of the camera or being behind the mic gets a little more, cachet, because, you know, you're the one talking, you're the one giving the information. More people want to do that, but there's a lot of people I know who only want to be behind the scenes as well, who don't want to take on the mic.
When you are producing a show, and you've been in a lot of different arenas of that, mm-hmm. is there a lot of similarity between them in terms of the process that you do it?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of preparation. There's a lot of, you know, hand-holding and babysitting is what I like to call producing, quite honestly, because you basically have to tell everybody where to go, where to be, at what time, and what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure they have all that information. You want your host to be as prepared as possible, and you want them not to look, you know, like they don't know what they're talking about. What's great about what I work in is that most of the people that I work with are you know, they're not just talking heads. They are, they're the ones with the information. They're the experts. So really, I just have to tell them when to show up and, oh, hey, by the way, don't forget that this story is breaking right now, or whatever. So that's a luxury. I have worked in the past where I've dealt with, you know, on-camera hosts who are just talking heads, and then you have to direct them more. You have to tell them, oh, read it this way, read a little bit more, be more enthusiastic, you know, that kind of thing. Because a lot of times they don't really know the topic.
Yeah.
No, or they're just the host. They don't necessarily, they just say, oh, and moving on next is, you know, so they don't really know the topic. So it's a little bit different now, which is kind of, is good, because I like working with people who really know their stuff. And that's where I'm at right now.
Did you grow up in the Bay Area?
No, I grew up in Southern California, which is probably what attributed to my, you know, want to work in media, because that's all there is. All the news is all about, you know, media and Hollywood.
Yeah. How Southern were you?
I was, are you in Southern California?
Costa Mesa, Newport Beach.
Oh, I was born in Los Angeles, but I lived in Ontario.
Oh, yes.
In the Inland Empire.
Yes, an airport to boot.
Yeah, we had an airport, and I was used to say it was an international airport, and boy, has that airport changed. Yes. So it's gotten better and bigger.
Yes, it's actually a great place to fly out of if you're headed to, like, Tennessee.
Ah, okay. Yeah. It's been a long time since I've been there. Yeah.
So tell me about your experience of growing up as a child. What was it like?
Well, I grew up in, you know, like I said, in the Inland Empire. Boy, very Southern California, very, I had like one Asian friend, one African-American friend, one, you know, Hispanic friend, and everyone else was white around me. So it was a little, you know, growing up, I was, you know, growing up in the late 70s, early 80s. There wasn't much going on. It was pretty slow. Mm-hmm. Not like, you know, we lived in a farming town or anything, but, you know, it was a slow, there wasn't, I lived in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And not much rock and roll or anything, you know. I would just be excited to drive out an hour to go to the beach sometime, that kind of thing. But, you know, I had a good upbringing. It was mostly me for a long time. Mm-hmm. My sister didn't come along until 10 years later after. I always used to say, hey, am I ever going to have a brother or a sister? And I don't, my parents never really wanted to have another child, and she was a surprise, but a good one, you know? So I was very excited when she came around finally. And they were too, but you know, it was a happy surprise. So, yeah, just grew up in Southern California. I was a little involved in a lot of, you know, academics and, you know, advanced placement classes and things like that. And then I was in the band and I was like a yearbook editor and I played a little bit of, tennis here and there. I kind of dabbled in a lot of things. I think that's kind of, indicative of what I've been doing even, nowadays. I kind of dabble in this, dabble in that, you know, I like to try everything, you know.
How did your parents impact your worldview?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I was first generation here, born in the United States. So it was a little different. They, you know, didn't quite understand, you know, the way it was just a little bit different because they have, you know, they were from the Philippines. My parents are both Filipino and they moved here probably 2 years before I was born, mm-hmm. year and a half or 2 years before I was born. So there was a little bit of a generational kind of like, oh, I Americans do this now, mom. And they're like, no, that's not what we do in the Philippines. You know, there's a little bit of that, you know, kind of struggle, especially with me as the firstborn. I think my sister got away with more. You know, they were a little strict in terms of, you know, hanging out with friends and sleepovers and stuff like that. And, you know, it was kind of it was an interesting upbringing to have sort of a bicultural upbringing where all my friends were American and I see what they do. And then my parents weren't. And, you know, I mean, I didn't have my first turkey till I was like 8 years old. You know, I didn't know what that was. My mom did, you know, she was like, oh, look, I can make this. I'm like, oh, wow. To this day, I don't like cranberry. I don't, you know, I eat rice a lot, you know, with our foods. It's just a different kind of Thanksgiving.
You have pork adobo instead?
Yes, we do. Right.
That was always one of my favorites.
And lechon and pancit, yes, and all that stuff. You know, you mix it in and then with a side of spaghetti on the side. There's, you know, a hodgepodge of different
That's
things.
That's quite a mix.
Yeah, it is. It was always a mix, but I always preferred that. I didn't want to go too American. We never put butter on our rice.
Oh, no.
So that was weird when I saw that happen when my friends would be like, don't you put butter on your rice? I'm like, what are you talking about? There were some things I wanted to adopt and there was some things I'm like, no, yes. That doesn't work. So, but you know, most of all, I had a really good upbringing. I mean, I think my parents were strict, but, you know, they didn't, I actually look back at that as okay. You know, I mean, I think they could have given me a little more latitude here and there. But overall it wasn't like stunting or anything. I think I was able to think independently and do independent things. And I kind of broke them in for my sister. So that's what I like to feel like I did that for them.
Since you did well academically, did you have a challenge in any other area? Or was everything easy for you?
No, it was not easy. I mean, I think, you know, and you go through any kind of high school challenge of like, do people like me? You know, I don't think I was certainly popular or was not one of the popular kids. You know, I hung out with the geeks and the nerds. Those were my buddies and, you know, the smarties, you know, we like to, you know, be like, oh, yeah, well, at least we're smart. You know, yeah. I actually went in and my purpose for being a yearbook editor was to make sure that all the popular people weren't the only ones on the pages in the yearbook. You know, I mean, I thought to myself, I'm going to be the yearbook editor and make sure everybody's representative.
Sure.
In the book, you know, because years before I was like, oh, it's just all the popular kids. I'm not going to have that in my yearbook. So, you know, I had a plan, I guess.
Now that you've survived childhood, what constitutes family for you?
Wow. Family is, you know, immediate family are the people that I trust. Mm-hmm. You know, my sister, my father, my mom has passed away and I miss her very much. It's been, God, it's been almost... In 2 years, it'll be 10 years. So, next year will be 10 years. My God. You know, it's one of those things where I've been so busy lately. I've been thinking to myself, boy, I need to see my family. I need to see them more and more. My father lives not too far away from me. He's only an hour away in San Jose, but the rest of my family lives in, and my sister lives in San Jose as well. But the rest of my family lives in Southern California. And, you know, family to me is feeling familiar, feeling comfortable, laughter, loudness, hugs and you know, to me it's like loud arguments and I don't know, it's just very dynamic. And to me, family is the people that you trust and the people who kind of accept you for who you are, mm-hmm. and know you from the very beginning. You know, my family, my immediate family is my husband. I have a husband. We don't have any kids yet. And then my dad and my sister. And then my husband has a sister who lives in Illinois and a brother who lives currently in Wisconsin, but he's moving to Florida. So that's our immediate family. And it, I don't think we see each other enough. But we will see my husband's family at the end of May because our nephew is graduating from high school. So,
well, how fun.
Yeah. It's time flies so fast. I believe he's already graduating from high school, but I'm very excited for that.
So what's it like to fall in love?
What's it like? Wow, these are deep. I didn't think we were going to ask these kinds of questions. I'm lucky. I am really a lucky girl because I don't have any kind of regret or fear or, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Where you don't feel comfortable in a relationship because you don't trust the other person. You know, I don't have any of that. Mm-hmm. I guess what it's like for me to fall in love is to be open and to be able to be yourself around the other person, to just know that that person is going to be there for you and know that you want to be there for that person for the rest of your life. And I know that, you know, which is great. I mean, I can't even tell you like how happy I am to know that I'm not dating and to know that I do not want that again. And to feel secure, I guess. Yeah, I think that's the word I was looking for. I'm not insecure about my relationship. I know that when I was dating before, I had lots of insecurities with the person that I was dating. And, you know, when I met Tom, I've never felt insecure in our relationship ever. One bit. And I knew early on. And we got engaged like 8 months after we met or after we started dating.
Wow.
But we didn't get married for another 2.5 years after that because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to have a long engagement. I'm like, boy, we rushed into getting engaged. Mm-hmm. We don't have to get married that fast. And I just wanted everybody to make sure. But actually 2.5 years was too long because by then everybody thought we were already married. So I don't advise that. That's too long. 8 months getting engaged might be a little too quick, but, you know, 2.5 years of engagement, nah, you don't need to go that long. Part of that was just saving money, too. But
mm-hmm. Well, sometimes it's hard to kind of plan out your life to the last detail.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, we paid for our wedding, so we wanted to make sure we could afford it.
Did you have a large wedding?
Medium size. We had like 120 people. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I loved that day. I want to relive it, honestly. That was one of my favorite days. We got married on Treasure Island in the Bay Area. It was 96 degrees, 95 degrees. It was so warm and beautiful. So the evening was just cool and gorgeous. And I can't, you know, where we got married, you could see the view of the Bay Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, Alcatraz, everything, you know, San Francisco, right across the bay. It was gorgeous. I think a lot of people took a ton of pictures that day. I just remember it being really fun and filled with love and with, you know, people that I really trust and who I really wanted to be there. And, you know, unfortunately, some of those people are divorced already, which is kind of interesting. Like, wait a minute, those two aren't together and those two aren't together anymore. Oh, my goodness. But our wedding was pretty awesome. And I still get comments to this day. People are like, oh, your wedding was great. So I hope you always remember that.
We'll have more with Eileen Rivera right after I remind you of the importance of health. If you're not familiar with it, I want to introduce you to CFIDS, Chronic Fatigue and Immune Dysfunction Syndrome. It's a complex disorder that impacts lots of different parts of the body. It's not just being chronically tired, it's having your life devastated. My daughter Katrina went to Nicaragua and volunteered at an orphanage for the summer. And when she came back, she had a rare form of salmonella, a flu-like condition, and those turned into an autoimmune disorder. She went from being very active to being very inactive. Her muscles simply don't work. She can't sit up at a table. She can't sit up to type of the computer. Just sitting quietly, even with her legs raised, her heart will race at 120 beats per minute. Her blood pressure will drop through the floor. She can't tolerate smells or perfumes or chemicals. We have to wash her clothes in a special solution. This complex cluster of symptoms is caused because her body thinks that she has a disease when there is no active virus present, or it's a virus they haven't been able to detect yet. So where there's problems with neurotransmitters, problems with cells replicating, a whole series of things come into this cluster. There's no cure for the condition, but research is helping to get closer to an understanding of what's going on. So go to cfids.org and donate. cfids, cfids.org. Thanks. So, Eileen, everybody needs to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Sometimes I watch a movie that inspires me, or read something with the theme that is inspiring, or just something that lifts my spirits. And that kind of kicks me in gear every once in a while. Sometimes I just have a good, talk with a friend who understands me. Maybe it's a coworker or something like that. But you need that every once in a while. You need that good kick in the pants because, boy, it's so easy to get down on things when really your life is not that bad after all, Mm-hmm. And I just have to, I do remind myself about that all the time. That's funny. I just saw a friend's tweet last night. She said, oh, my God, I had the worst day ever. The worst day ever. I'm just sobbing. And then the next tweet was like, but I know my life is better than some other people. So I need to remind myself of that. And I was like, yeah, you really do. You know, you can go and complain on Twitter. That's fine. But you really, I haven't reached out. I don't know what's going on with her right now. But my guess is that it's probably work related. And, even if it is relationship related, I know she's better off than a lot of people. You know what I mean? So I think she's okay. But yeah, sometimes it's that. Sometimes I actually seek out, what's an inspiring movie or what's something that, I guess I seek out media in some ways, and maybe that's not always the best source to get your butt kicked. But, that little dose of reality also can just come from friends who just know you. And hopefully they just look at me and just say, really? There's nothing wrong with you. Tom does that. My husband does that. He's like, okay, let's step back. He likes to give me the other side of the story. And sometimes I want to hear it and sometimes I don't. And I just tell him, like, I don't want to hear why I could be wrong right now. I just want to say I'm upset.
When you are upset, how do you soothe yourself? How do you calm yourself down?
It's hard. Sometimes I just have to let myself cry, just let it go. Because if I hold it in, which I tend to do a lot of times, it's just going to explode. But at the same time, I don't want to get upset and just blurt it out without really thinking about it. I've done that before where I'm like, wait a minute. And then I think 3 days later, I'm like, God, I'm a little bit more calm about the issue. I should have thought about it a little bit more. But to calm myself, sometimes I go work out. Sometimes I, just let it go that way. Sometimes I take a walk. I don't suggest food, but sometimes I need to go get like a cup of ice cream or something like that. But that's not always the solution. I just, I just try to pace around. I just try to just shake it off. And, honestly, sometimes a good glass of wine will help me calm down as well. Not more, just one. I don't drink that much, but it's a combination of that. And it's hard, though, sometimes, because when you're in the heat of it all, sometimes you just want to punch a bag. I don't have a bag. Maybe I should get one, like a little boxing bag, but I'm still looking for maybe better ways. I try and do a little bit of yoga if I can. Sometimes I can't concentrate. I'm too upset that, doing a pose is not going to help me in that moment. But sometimes I just need to go, to a quiet place and just kind of be away from everybody and then space it out and then come back. Sometimes I just need to give myself a little breather, and that helps. I don't throw things generally. I don't kick things. I'm not very violent like that, thank God.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Probably when my mother died. That was hard. She has always had, growing up, she had kidney transplants, and she wasn't always healthy. When she died, it was only 6 months earlier, we discovered she had advanced form of cancer. And at that point, nothing could be done. And it was sort of saying goodbye was really tough, knowing that it was going to happen, and calming my dad down, because he didn't want to believe it. He didn't want to believe that was going to happen. He just said, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to fix this? When all the doctors were telling me it was the opposite. It's like, look, we're going to make it easy for her. And they gave her a beautiful, I don't know why, how we were able to get this gorgeous room in the hospital. But, you know, they really made it good for us, but it was still tough just knowing that, you know, the end was near. That was really hard. And my sister was really young. She was just about to graduate from high school. And, you know, was losing. I mean, she was closer to my mom than I was. I'll never forget that. It was really like losing someone like if you're close to your parents is really right now the hardest thing that I've ever had to deal with. And we had some time to say goodbye. It was short. It was only like 6 weeks, seriously, when she was really diagnosed till she passed. But there was some time, you know. But it was, you know, it's still hard. It's still hard to comprehend, you know. And I don't know how you really ever get over it, because, you know, there's someone missing in your life that was big influence. I miss her recipes. I miss, you know, her telling me, when are you coming home for Christmas? You know, when are you doing this? You know, so I think, yeah, that was definitely the hardest time in my life. And boy, that was just something where I just decided nothing else mattered. Work, I could care less. I put that aside. And thankfully, people at work were really, you know, I worked in a place that was very supportive. And I had a lot of supportive people around me. Family from Southern California drove up. I mean, a lot of supportive family and friends and all of that. And that helped me through. But yeah, that was tough. I don't wish that upon anybody. And I know, I'm guessing anybody who has ever lost somebody that was very close to them totally understands, you know, what I mean in terms of, wow, that was powerful and hard. And, you know, God, you know, you just think, God, I wish that didn't happen, you know, because there's nothing you can do, you know?
Yeah. Given what you know now, if you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would you say? What would be your best advice?
I think to trust your gut and to follow your heart and what you truly believe and want to do, even if it's controversial, even if you feel like you may burn some bridges. In the end, it'll all come back around. I also do believe that you should be, and I'm working on this still, you should be nice to everyone. Everyone is a human being and worthy of your time and conversation, no matter who they are. And, you know, you should be respectful of that and never lose sight that, you know, we're all human beings and we should all just kind of remember that, I guess. Yeah. So don't forget who you are. Trust your gut a lot when you're moving through life, and stand up for what you believe in. It's hard. It's hard sometimes. There's lots of voices out there that tell you that you're wrong, or that you don't know what you're talking about, or, you know, they just say negative things. But you know, you got to own up to mistakes as well. But, you know, I think I'm talking in general terms of like, if you want to pursue something and you truly believe it and you want it, it's those people that really work hard to get it that, you know, that succeed. And I think there's always exceptions to the story and to the rules and whatnot. But in general, with whatever you're doing, just kind of trust your gut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my best piece of advice.
Last question is to help me get better at this. Think of a defining moment in your life that we didn't talk about. What should I have asked you that I didn't?
That's a good question. I don't know. Well, we didn't talk about future stuff. You know, we could have talked about stuff that I'm looking forward to or want to do.
So, Eileen, thinking ahead to the future, what would you like to do?
You know, honestly, in my life, I just want to be able to know how to be and stay sane in this crazy world, quite honestly, and not, you know, be overwhelmed with information. We have a ton of tools out there that, you know, every once in a while I get a little overwhelmed and I think, God, I'm reading too much. There's too much information here. Sometimes, you know, I'm looking forward to the day that I can really control that and control is not a really good word, I think, or really kind of just accept that, you know, and not get caught up in the hype and in too much information and be a lot more sane about mm-hmm. it all. Be calm about it all.
The computers that you have, they don't come with buttons on them?
They do, but they're hard to turn off. I'm a little addicted. So yeah, I look forward to that day. I'm still working on that. It's a work in progress, you know?
So the looking forward part is more about personal growth than it is about activity?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think I'm always looking to grow mm-hmm. as a person. I think, you know, it's a mistake to think that you're done,
yeah.
you know? There's always room for improvement, always. And I think that someday, you know, in my hopefully sage, wise self, in my, you know, 20 years from now, you know, mm-hmm. I would have accomplished that. So, you know, it's not about the money or the fame or anything. It's just about being calm and you know, happy, of course, but being calm with everything. That's what I'm looking for. I always look for that because it could get a little chaotic and I could get caught up in all of that. So that's what I think about for the future. You know, I'd love to travel more too, but you know, you can't always afford that.
Where would you go?
I'd probably go to Asia a lot more mm-hmm. Than I already have. And probably I'd want to visit Asia more than I already have, which is not a lot. So, yeah.
Well, my thanks to Eileen Rivera for joining me today. Thanks, Eileen. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I mean, I didn't realize how in depth we would get, Ken. But I really appreciate it. I felt like it was, you know, sort of therapy. Was that your goal?
I'm a psychologist. You got to go somewhere.
Yeah. I know. When you really surprised me with the love question. Whoa.
Oh, good.
That was pleasantly surprised. I like that. I mean, you know, you have to start with the work and all of that. But that's not really who you are.
No.
No. It's everything else around. So, yeah.